This episode brought to you by Origins, origination technology for today's credit unions. On the show today, we have ALM First very own David Ritter and Jessica Richardson, as well as Farley Wadowitz very own Hal Scoggins. They're all on the show today talking about mergers taking place in 2022. We're talking about why they're taking place and why they're happening at such a breakneck pace today. What does the typical timeline look like? When is the best time to involve the legal folks, and what's some challenges and things to avoid in the merger world? So we covered a lot in this interview, so I hope you guys check it out. Let's do some introductions before we dive into the main topic here. Right, I'm going to do ladies first. Diagonal down below from me is Jessica Richardson from ALM First. Jessica, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
And thank you. No, go ahead, please.
I was going to introduce your partner in crime there, Mr. David Ritter from ALM First, right above you as well. David, how are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you, Dave. My
Well, actually, my middle name is David, so you're not too far off.
There we go.
All right. You're all right. And then right below me is Mr. Hal Scoggins from Farley, Wada, and Witt, or FWW. What's the proper naming there, Hal? Should we do FWW or Farley, Wada, Witt?
Farley, Wada, Witt is fine. FWW is fine.
Okay.
We'll answer to anything.
Okay, right on. All right, good stuff. Hey, I'm really excited about this conversation today because it's super timely, and I'm getting pitches and press releases and things like that almost on a daily basis about credit unions merging. And we all know what a kind of a polarizing issue that is in our industry as well. It can be polarizing, but it's happening whether you like it or not, and it seems to be happening more common. So Jessica, I'm going to start with you again, ladies first here. So credit unions and mergers, that's what we're talking about. So why are they happening, and why are they happening at such kind of a breakneck pace today? Was it kind of pent up frustration from the pandemic, and then all of a sudden, hey, the floodgates are open, it's business as usual again? Or what are you seeing out there?
Although I don't think the pandemic hindered the fact that there's a lot of mergers happening, I think we've been on pace for a lot of mergers happening for several years. Yeah. I think the pandemic brought forth opportunity to look at more of a collaborative approach. And so I spent a lot of time with credit unions talking about mergers and merger strategy. And while it's never a credit union's sole strategy, I think what we're finding is in a very competitive landscape, a merger or exploring a merger with somebody and really leaning into our credit union values, which is collaborative and people helping people, and how can we work together better, right? Yeah. Then we are seeing an uptick in mergers. And so this is a way to, you know, it's a way to save on expenses. It's a way to have a deeper bench, so to speak, with talent. Yeah. There's a lot of opportunity within mergers. So I don't know that the pandemic was the trigger, because I think if you look historically at the numbers, we've seen these surges in mergers over time. But again, I really think the pandemic made people sort of go back and say, we need to lean into our credit union roots and do this better.
Yeah. I've had more credit union merger stories this year alone than probably the entire history of CU Broadcast, just because it's so prevalent today. And the folks that we've had on, I mean, their reasoning and their logic all seems very, very business-like. This is a business transaction, and why they're doing it seems extremely logical. So, but again, it's such a polarizing issue. And David, I'm going to get your take on this. And Hal, I'm going to ask you the same question too. I'm going to get each of your takes on this one. David, I'll let you go next.
Yeah, I echo what Jessica said. However, I think that there has been some folks that have been on the sidelines for so long. COVID did open their eyes and at least want to throw their hat in the ring.
Yep.
Realizing that the digital transformation, serving their membership, especially I'm in the Midwest, and if you have a branch that doesn't have a drive-through and you don't have the digital means, how could you serve them?
Yeah.
Capital is king. And right now we just see that more and more activity, people having discussions. Doesn't mean they're going to go to the wedding chapel right away, but there is some pent up demand. I see 2023 and really 2024, because it does take time.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have some banner years in mergers, and they're not just small. They're to multi, you know, billion or larger size credit unions. So I see that more and more happening. And to also echo and just take it one more level from what Jessica was saying is that we're finding is that I have not talked to one CEO in the market space that to say, oh, I have too much talent, too much capacity. Everyone's looking for more talent, and it's hard to come by. And what ends up happening is we start to hire from each other. And instead of doing that, why don't we just collaborate, come together, retain all of our people? Because many times I've talked to CEOs that say they have, you know, 50 people that they're looking for to hire in. We do a merger, you bring them all together, and there then instead of hiring back and forth, and then we have one core system, so we get some economies of scale that way. So that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and that's kind of echoing what some of the folks that I interviewed earlier in the year, they echoed that same sentiment as well. And Hal, I want to get the Farley Wadowitz perspective of what you're seeing out there as far as mergers right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, to sort of echo what both David and Jessica said, but also put a little more slant on it. I think we're seeing a qualitatively different kind of merger now than was normal in the past. And I'd say in the past, in the old days, whatever that means, we would see a lot of mergers that were driven by what I would call need of one sort or another. It could be, you know, a sponsor shutting down. It could be field of membership issue. It could be a CEO getting ready to retire and the board looking like, we're going to have a hard time replacing this person. And of course, that's what NCUA's proposed rule on succession planning is all about. And, you know, I don't think those will go away or have gone away. And a lot of the needs that drive those types of mergers are still there. But I think what we've also seen, whether it's coincidental with the pandemic or driven in part by some of the things that were a part of the pandemic I don't know, but I think we're seeing more mergers that are what I would call strategic in nature, where two credit unions, neither one of which necessarily has a, you know, an immediate need to merge, that they're trying to fill that need. But they're looking long-term for their membership and their business goals and their objectives and saying, you know what, we see an opportunity, we have a desire to, you know, do more of this, and that credit union's already doing that. Whether it's geographic reach, whether it's maybe, you know, loan mix, you've got one credit union's heavy into loans of X type, and another is heavy into loans of Y type, and they complement each other well, all sorts of things like that. And I think we're seeing more of that than we used to.
Many of these mergers obviously are completely different. They're all different animals, and obviously credit unions are different. So, but yeah, collaborating and collectively bringing things together, whether it's resources or technology or talent, that type of stuff. So yeah, and Jessica, I see you nodding your head. So I'm going to pose the next question here to you guys as well. So how do credit unions move from conceptualizing a merger to actually executing the merger? Jessica, I'll let you go first on this one as well.
Oh, gosh. You know, I think having a plan, I mean, that's a loaded question, right? Like, you know, how do you go from thinking about it to doing it? I think you go through a lot of steps. And I actually, I'm not going to speak very long here because I feel like, David, this is totally a David Ritter question. Okay. But I do feel like it is having the plan, and how do you get to that plan, and having honest dialogue at the board level first before you even decide to throw your hat in the ring. So again, I feel like I should, you know, toss this over to Mr. Ritter here on this interview, because this is his wheelhouse.
David, Jessica teed you up, sir.
Wow, that was an easy one. Thanks, Jessica. it's funny because you can talk to credit unions all over the country and everyone knows what they want. At least that's what they say. We know that we need to be the surviving institution. We know this, we know that. But if you start to, you know, peel that onion more and you ask all the board members and the executive team, more often than not, they're not completely aligned. So there may be a conceptual merger plan, throwing the hat in the ring, but the biggest issue I see is that there are some fine-tuned areas where people are not in agreement. I always say that why waste your time to go talk to another organization if you're not even in alignment internally, to go waste your time and talk to someone else out there. So I, really what needs to happen is go through a very transparent and discussion, just as your normal organic strategy planning session. But what are, everyone hates SWOT, but I say, what are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? How can we help another organization with our strengths, and how someone else's strengths outcome our own weaknesses? So in other words, is saying our combined strengths outweigh our individual weaknesses. Yeah. What are our negotiating points? Would we be willing to change a name to a different organization's name? Would we be willing to have a DBA for a period of time? Would we be willing to open up our board of directors to a larger board, or have some of our board members take a step down for the betterment of the combined organization? Mm-hmm. Are we willing to talk to an organization? This is a unique one that maybe has cannabis lending. Are we willing to talk to an organization that is a state over, not directly in our path? Those type of things. Are we willing to talk to an organization larger than us? Those type of things, and have a very good spirited discussion internally, so we're all on the same page. Mm-hmm. And then I can't highlight this enough, is that you have to have this written and approved, that these are our negotiating points, because the worst thing in the world is you go out to market, you start to talk to other organizations. It's all marriage. It's all, we're getting to know each other. It's building rapport. Yeah. Yeah. But if we start to go down a path and we don't, and we're kind of negotiating outside of the realm that our board said, we're just wasting our time. So we have to have something, some guide rails there. Mm-hmm. And so having that written document before you go out to market.
Indy, yes, super smart. And Hal, anything to add on this one?
Yeah, a wise person once told me, you can't change plans if you don't have plans. So just to reinforce what they said, I mean, the very first thing is to know what you're looking for, what your objectives are. Because if you don't have particular objectives that you're trying to meet, then why are you bothering in the first place? Mm-hmm. Why would somebody else want to bother with you if you don't have objectives to meet?
Exactly.
Then you decide you do have objectives to meet, and a merger is one of the right ways to go about that. Then you know who you'd be interested in talking to and who you wouldn't be interested in talking mm-hmm. to.
Completely.
Not wasting their time or yours, and or David's going out and finding the right partners when you don't know who your partners are going to be. And I think one of the things also that's critical for a board and management to be aware of is unrealistic expectations. And you need to realize that, first of all, you've got two completely different organizations. No matter mm-hmm. how compatible they are, there are going to be bumps in the road.
Yeah.
And second of all, there may be things that you haven't thought about as the process goes on, or as you find a particular partner. And David talked about who's the surviving charter. And, you know, that's an interesting question. And, you know, the surviving legal charter may not necessarily be the surviving true entity. And sometimes there's a reason for having a legal charter, you know, one or the other survive because of advantages based on, you know, field of membership or federal versus state in a particular state, advantages of one charter over the other, anything like that, you know, a historical MBL designation that mm-hmm. allows lending notwithstanding the cap. You know, there's lots of reasons why you might look at two credit union charters and choose one over the other. And even if one is culturally the surviving credit union, that charter may not necessarily be the surviving charter. And that's just one example of what I would say, avoid having unrealistic expectations, and have an open mind and be willing to look at possibilities.
And speaking of avoiding, Hal, I'm going to pose this one to you. So what are some things to avoid if mergers are part of your strategy?
Well, that's a good question. I think one thing is again, the unrealistic expectations and a rigid mindset. Another thing is to avoid closing your eyes and not looking at what you're doing. I do think it's easy for credit unions to avoid, you know, what a lot of people in the legal field would call due diligence. Mm-hmm. And it's critical to know what you're getting into, because unlike any other kind of merger in the credit union world, once it's done, it's done. And once that merger is over, you know, the surviving credit union, the continuing credit union is what it is, mm-hmm. and there will be no recourse against anybody based on dashed expectations or things not being as represented. So it's not just the traditional due diligence in the legal sense, like, you know, we're going to look at your loan portfolio, we're going to look at your contracts and your HR issues, litigation, whatever else that we need to do as part of the mm-hmm. due diligence process. Mm-hmm. It's really what I would call cultural due diligence as well, and making sure that, you know the ins and outs of that organization, yep. And they know your ins and outs. And if there are things that are misaligned or expectations that aren't quite meeting each other, you know, work those things out in advance, mm-hmm. or worst case scenario, determine that they can't be worked out. And that happens sometimes. And, yep. and, you know, probably just like a marriage, it's better if it doesn't happen and you find out what was wrong up front, then you find
way
out
down the road. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, and the merger has been consummated, but 2-3 years down the road, you're still trying to merge the organization mm-hmm. culturally. That's a difficult yeah. thing.
Yeah, and we've all seen those stories in the news where, you know, two big credit unions are emerging, and then all of a sudden, you know, 3 or 4 months later, well, we've decided to call it off. It just didn't work out, type of thing. So better to find that stuff out up front than, like you said, 2 or 3, 4 years down the road. So yeah, anybody else, David, Jessica, do you guys have any other things to avoid top of mind for you?
I'm going to come at this from a little bit of a different perspective, because primarily what I work with credit unions doing is working on the communication piece of it, right? Mm-hmm. The internal and the external. And so if we sort of dial back to the point where we have that merger strategy and we've developed it with the board, I think one of the things that credit unions need to work really diligently to avoid is to avoid staff not knowing that there is a merger strategy. Now, let me be clear. That does not mean that credit union staff should know what mergers are happening or what conversations are happening. Mm-hmm. But I've worked on a lot of mergers in the last few years where employees have come back and said, we're growing through mergers. And I think just having a strategic plan that's shared with your staff and having a communication plan where at least staff knows, like, perhaps of course we want to grow organically. And of mm-hmm. course we want to grow through, you know, different offerings that we have, and we want to get more products and services out of the members that we have and serve them better. But if you do have merger strategy as part of your growth strategy, I think it's really important that your whole organization knows we're entertaining these. And so that will help sort of, you don't want to get to the point where you're announcing one to staff and they're blindsided by this whole concept of merger. So that to me, again, sort of coming at it from a different perspective is something to avoid.
Mm-hmm. Transparency is kind of important here. David, any other items to avoid?
Yeah, a few things that when I talk to my clients at the very beginning, and this is just the terminology here, is get rid of the word acquisition. It's a partnership. Yes, one organization's charter will remain,
right?
And legally that is who the acquiring credit union is, mm-hmm. but in credit unions, I don't care how big they are, how small they are, at the end of the day, it's about a collaboration between two organizations, not for profit, that are trying to do best for their stakeholders. And the stakeholders are our members, it is our employees, it's our community, it's our board of directors, the list goes on. And to keeping those eyes open, every time I have a transaction that comes together, I do sort of a post discussion. I said, so what made this one work? And in so many words, the board always comes back and says, we left our egos at the door. We went into this, and even if we right off the bat, we didn't know who the organization is, and we heard all these different stories, and we're like, oh, okay, I don't know about this. But you know what? Go in with an open mind and break bread. Sometimes they become your best friends. Doesn't mean a merger is going to happen, but it's a small industry out there. Everyone knows everyone. And I always use this, 50% of us are related somehow, that just get to know each other, because it is a consolidating and it will continue to consolidate. Most transactions right now are between two well-run organizations. So who knows what may happen. The other thing to avoid, is there's a balancing act here, is you don't want deal fatigue. deal fatigue. You don't want something to go on for so long because if people are getting that, you have strategies you have to, your organic strategies, but you don't want to go so fast that you forget to do things like how I was mentioning your due diligence. It's your fiduciary responsibility to go through all these things and make sure that all those things come up because that gets fair valued. Mm-hmm. Those are things that are, you know, could impact our membership. So you got to be very transparent up front. So just a few little things for anyone that's thinking of throwing their hat in the ring.
Very smart indeed. And David, I'm going to stick with you on this one. What does a typical merger timeline look like? I know you guys have done a number of these and been involved in a number of these. So what does a typical one, or is there a typical merger? Maybe that's the opportune question.
Typical is always, that's the interesting typical one. It ranges from super fast, a year, to one that is bigger, longer, more sophisticated, maybe up to 2 years. Now, when I say this, it's when you already have two organizations coming together, have a discussion. There's already a little bit of breaking the bread, rapport building. The very beginning is the most important part. It's not kicking the can down the road. Ask the difficult questions early. You know, based on what I call the search profile or strategic plan is, are we willing to change our name? What does the board composition look like? Those type of things. Which charter are we going to go forward with? Maybe we don't know. Maybe they're two both state chartered credit unions, and let's just get rid of the ego and do a fair valuation and say which one makes more sense to merge into the other one. That takes some time. The negotiation on the LOI, the fair valuation, the due diligence takes another 2-3 months. Regulatory requirements now are taking up to 90 days in some cases to have them, the regulators take a look at this and say, okay, you're fine to go off and talk and have the member vote. After that, there's something called a 2-week cure period, and that's just round numbers, and then you have to send out the member ballot at least 45 days before a member vote. So you put all these in line. It's once you get everyone together, that's the minimum is 12 months, probably closer to 18 months after you have already built some rapport up.
Gotcha. Good stuff. And how, the legality question here, when is the ideal time to involve legal in the process?
And a somewhat self-serving answer to that, I'll say immediately.
Right now.
But in all seriousness, I do think it's important to bring counsel in early in the process because of some of the things that we've already talked about. Especially experienced credit union counsel, we can help work through some of those issues like, okay, we've got two state chartered credit unions that have similar charters. What are some things we should think about and look at in terms of comparative advantage of one versus the other? And maybe there isn't any. But we can help figure that out. We can help look at some of the other issues in terms of, if we've got multi-state issues, how do we work around that? Depending on if it's a federal or a state chartered credit union, you know, what hoops have to be jumped through and when do they have to be jumped through? It's a little bit different, you know, in each situation, depending on which states you're dealing with and whether state charters involved and, you know, and then of course there's all the vendor contract issues and other similar things once you get down to the nitty gritty. But to be able to help through that planning process and help again be sure that expectations are realistic and that that we can work through all those issues in a sort of logical and unhurried way as opposed to pushing everything to the last minute and having a bunch of surprises.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Don't push it to the last minute. Oh my gosh. That's exactly like you said. There's a lot of surprises that can happen. And Jessica, this question is for you. Well, it's for everybody. But earlier we talked about things to avoid. But what are some of the biggest challenges when it comes to a merger? What have you seen out there as far as challenges go?
Well, you know, we're dealing with the fact that mergers are change. And so the biggest thing with mergers relative to two organizations coming together is the change that is incurred through the process. And so, I think if you look at two organizations coming together and they're similar in culture, and we have a lot of organizations that are coming together that are similar, there are never two identical cultures, right? And so, you know, I think probably the biggest hardship of a merger is overcoming the change the change that the organizations have to go through, because mm-hmm. not everybody knows at the same time. And so you go through a merger, and initially the board and the CEOs know, and that's a very small circle of knowledge or sphere of knowledge. And then we get an LOI signed, we start putting a supplemental merger agreement together, we're getting very close to the point where we're going to submit a regulatory packet. And at that point, we're starting to loop more people in the due diligence process, we're looping more people in. And then ultimately, we're going to let two staffs know. We're going to let two, you know, complete employee groups know, and then members. And so each of these groups, as you go through the process, you're acknowledging the change that they're all going through. So it's critical to have a plan in place on how you're going to handle that. And yeah, so I guess I would say that's the biggest, from my perspective, the mm-hmm. biggest challenge is mm-hmm. the change of it. And that, yeah. that includes the membership, because, yep. you know, you have that member who has account number 1234, and mm-hmm. they're on the side of the merger that they're going to have to vote. And there is a process, and there is a process that they have to go through, or a grieving period they have to go through.
Change is difficult sometimes, but sometimes it's necessary too. So, David, anything from your perspective on challenges?
Yeah, I just wrote some things down here, five different things. First thing is perception is most of the transactions we're working on now are between two well-run organizations. Well, when you hear a merger, kind of a knee-jerk reaction historically are folks thinking, well, I'm not doing well, and that's why I'm doing a merger. Well, as I just mentioned, most transactions right now are between two well-run organizations, just realizing that 1 + 1 = 12, and we can get there within a year, year and a half, as opposed to 10 years to do all the things, additional things we want to do. So perception and getting rid of that whole thought that, you know what, we're not doing well. We're doing well, and we're trying to be strategic and do the best thing for our stakeholders. Our stakeholders, the members, our employees, communities, etc. The next thing is the surviving institution. Whenever I go out and I talk to an organization that we think makes sense to talk to another organization, the first thing that when I finally get a hold of the CEO, they say is, thank you. You know, we're looking at mergers. However, we must be the surviving institution. That happens 9 out of 9 times.
Wow.
And so that, again, it goes back to that humanistic element is, well, what does that mean? It's the legal item of whose charter remains, but is it culture? Is it CEO? Is it board of directors? Is it executive board? Is it headquarters? Is it courses? You get my drift. Mm-hmm. So those type of things. Then it's the ego, as I mentioned. So just being open to exploring something. Just listen. That's really at the end of the day, because our fiduciary responsibility is to do what's best for our members. Not every credit union has to do anything. Most don't. But if we can do better for our credit union, shouldn't we at least explore that?
Yep. Yep.
The last and absolute most important, the most difficult part is the board of directors. I heard recently someone said, and I can't remember who it was, but boards of the new capital. And it's about an organization that has been has board members that have been on the board for, you know, a number of years. They put their blood, life, sweat, and tears in this organization. Like, no way am I going to merge into someone else or change the way we're doing things. So it's very difficult. So I always say, okay, what's our fiduciary responsibility as a board? It's for our shareholders. So at least explore that and come up with different methodologies to consider it. You can always say no, but at least have that discussion earlier than later.
Yeah, good stuff. Oh my gosh. Yeah, earlier than later, like Hal said before, don't leave stuff to the last minute. And Hal, I want to get the legal, from the legal perspective, what challenges are you seeing out there?
Well, honestly, I think the bigger challenges are not the legal challenges. In a credit union merger, the legal challenges, putting aside issues like, okay, how do we deal with field of membership and, you know, maybe some questions there, especially when federal credit unions are involved. But those are overcomable. The bigger challenges, I think, are the things that Jessica and David just talked about. And I'd say change and perception. And perception has to be based on reality. And, you know, members and employees and you know, board as well, everybody wants to feel like there is value in the organization. Mm-hmm. There's value in the organization that we were a part of, and there will be value in the organization that we're a part of going forward. Everybody also wants to be part of something that's stable. You know, you talk about the most significant changes that individuals go through, like getting a new job, getting married, getting divorced, you know, all of those types of things. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of those things wrapped up in a merger. You're kind of getting married. You're sort of changing jobs, at least some of the people are in some way. And you're also moving in some way, or it feels that way. And then you're going to go through this process of melding two organizations. And at some point after that, you're going to take a good chunk of them and go through one of the most significant traumas that a credit union can undergo. And that's a core conversion.
Good times for sure.
You know, I think for the members and the employees to get the signal from the top, and that's going to be the CEOs and the board, that we have a goal. Our goal has been to preserve the value for the membership and is to preserve the value for the membership. Mm-hmm. And this merger brings forward value, and we will remain stable through this process. We're different, but we're still stable. You can have stability through change. And I think for a board and the CEOs and the other senior managers to project that stability, is important.
Yeah, you need some solid leadership if you're going to go through something like this and really put out that message of positive. This is a positive thing for our industry and for our organization and for you and for ultimately the members. So strong, solid leadership across the board for sure. So yeah, great points, everybody. Anything else here? I mean, we could talk about this for another 2 hours, I'm sure, because you guys live this day in and day out, and there's so many avenues to take this down. But I'm just going to kind of wrap it up here with anything else to add to wrap up. David, I'll let you go first. Any final thoughts here or continuing thoughts as we venture into 2023 and 2024?
Really, it's just we're in the credit union space, and all these things are all about building rapport. It's getting to know the person across the table, building trust and confidence. That's how mergers work. We are not exchanging cash. Yes, there's accounting in there, but it's about the humanistic element. And so, you know, as part of a board and executive's job is to understand what's going on in the market space and meet with other executives from other organizations and just start to build that rapport. As I mentioned, everyone knows everyone and 50% of us are related. Somehow you may end up going to another credit union, whatever it is, but there's consolidation happening, and you will probably be part of a merger as part of your career in this credit union space.
Yeah.
So get to know people. Just start to have those discussions. And before you know it, there may be a match made in heaven. And what I love is when I see two boards come together in a merger and they found their best friend on the other side because the cultures make so much sense. And it's all about that rapport building.
Yeah, that's good news for sure. Jessica, I'll let you go next.
Yeah, I think we've probably beat this dead horse, but I'll beat it a little bit more. I mean, you have your merger strategy and your plan, and you put it out there with the board, and then you go and you get to the point where you have a merger partner, and your planning and your collaboration doesn't end there, right? Because this process takes 12 months, 24 months, then there's going to be a conversion. And so at every point in that, you have to continue to work cross-organizationally, because we're looking at partnership mergers at this point to, mm-hmm. to sort of go back to where we started. Most mergers happening today, there's mergers that, of course, there's troubled credit unions that are going to be merged in, but a lot of these mergers are about coming together in a very partnership format. And mm-hmm. so how do we do that well from the day that we meet as a board through the time that we're completely combined through a core conversion? And it's through making sure that we have a plan, making sure that we're working cross-organizationally, and making sure that we understand the best laid plans still dip. And there's a graphic out there somewhere about a plan that's supposed to go like this, but really a plan, there's like the dam you have to go through and the, you know, you have to jump over something, like the best laid plans. So really having an organization that is focused on like, what are we going to do if this plan doesn't happen? So sort of scenario planning and doing that, sort of being able to pivot. And so, mm-hmm. There's a lot that goes into it, but I think at the end of the day, it really is about looking at the whole process from a planning perspective.
No doubt. And the great thing about the credit union industry, as you guys well know, and our audience probably listening live as well know that this industry is so open to communicating and collaborating. There's all sorts of resources out there, whether it's another company or another credit union who just went through a merger. You can reach out to these people and say, hey, what worked for you? What didn't work for you? How can you help us in there? So yeah, that's what's so great about this industry, is that, you know, a great resource is just a phone call away or a Zoom call away. So yeah, all that stuff is out there for sure. So it's a nice comfort to have. So, and Hal, I'm going to let you go last on kind of the, anything else to add to wrap up here.
I'll just say that if like most credit unions, your board is thinking about the members with clear eyes and with a lot of care, you'll do the right thing.
Yeah, no doubt. Well said. All righty, guys. Well, I'm going to let you guys get back to work, because I know you have a lot of work to do, because there's a lot of action going on. There's a lot of activity, obviously, in the credit union merger world right now, and you guys are right there on the forefront of it. And we thank you so much for your time today as well. I know you guys are super busy, but thank you for your time and your expertise. Great, great takeaways in this talk, and we appreciate all you guys out there watching live too. So thank you, and it'll be recorded on Twitter and LinkedIn as well, and YouTube too. So if you want to go back, and if you missed a part of this, go back and check out the whole thing. It was really good stuff here. David, Jessica, Hal, thank you again. Appreciate it, and look forward to the next chat down the road.
Thank you. This episode brought to you by Origins, origination technology for today's credit unions.